Tonight's the night we normally talk or play reruns or get on the subject matter of the Lost Tribes. I may end up there, but I want to talk about something differently. Go over here, Billy, with your camera. I suppose I could relate this to the Lost Tribes, because I believe that the Lost Tribes have never been lost to God, and they were punished, as Hosea says, scattered, as the drama enacted in Hosea's own life unfolds in his first chapter. Scattered because of their idolatry and punishment. Divorced, as Jeremiah says in the third chapter of his prophecies. Treated as a people not receiving God's mercy, thus not recognizable as they previously were, as the favored, chosen, preferred in treatment people of God. Treated in such a manner that they would not be recognizable or identified as God's people. But in the place that they've been scattered and so treated, they would become a vast multitude and become known as the sons of God, which is the designation of Christians. Jesus said concerning his message, "Go first to the lost house of Israel." He knew where it was. He certainly knew the scripture in Isaiah 53, the suffering Messiah dies to remove the barrier, takes the sins of the world upon himself. And immediately Isaiah 54 shows the first recipient, the wife that had been rejected. God had two wives throughout Scripture. That analogy in the Old Testament is drawn. Israel and Judah. They were seen as two people even when they were in Egypt, as the prophecy of Ahola and Aholibah makes clear in Ezekiel's prophecy. Though they appeared united when they came out of Egypt, their separation at the death of Solomon forms two nations, one carried away into bondage in Assyria, the other 100 to 125 years later, the southern kingdom to Nebuchadnezzar, and the northern kingdom appeared to disappear. It just took a new name. You have the clue in their immediate bondage. The sixth king, Omri it is in the King James, O-M-R-I, but with the harsh aspirant, like the Greek word hagios, which has the vowel A, with the harsh aspirant sound, ha, sometimes written with a K, sometimes with a KH, sometimes with an H, as we Western talking people try to assimilate how to write that harsh sound, and we in recent history have had to contend with various spellings and news media persons giving various pronunciations to Khomeini or Khomeini. Same word for Omri, Khomri, Khemri, vowel sound being debatable since they had none. He was their sixth king. He moved the capital from the dedicated place in Shiloh, where the tabernacle had stood, to Samaria. He rewrote the laws for the northern kingdom. And when the Assyrians conquered, the power of this sixth king was such that when Samaria fell in 721 B.C., the last half of the 8th century B.C., they were not referred to as Israelites. They were not referred to as the house of Israel. They were not referred to as Samaria, their historic biblical terms. They never had been referred to as Jews because they weren't. They were Hebrews, Israelites. But the word Jew, as I've pointed out so many times, did not occur until the kingdom separated and the northern tribes, in an alliance with heathen, were attacking the southern kingdom of Judah. And then and only then, the citizens of Judah are called Jews. They never were Jews. They were house of Israel, Ephraimites, after their dominant tribe, Samaria, after their new capital. And literature and history referred to as the ten-tribed kingdom. But their conquerors, the Assyrians, called them Beit Qumri, Beit Umri, Beit Umri, sons of Umri, after their dominant sixth king. The Kimri, the Kimrians, Kimrians, Sumerians. They took on other names. The only characteristic the Scythians had is they were mobile and were great archers. The term comes from their habit of living in Sukkoths or Sukkoths after Feast of the Tabernacles, Feast of Sukkoth, the tabernacles or tents. We encounter them under a different name on the Behistun Rock. The Persians referred to them as Scythians or Scuthians or Sakasuni. So what's so strange about finding them under another name? The people whom Herodotus encountered north of the Black Sea in the Russian steppes between the Black Sea and the Caspian Sea, who called themselves Keltoi, now referred to as the Celts. We trace the history of the European peoples in Central and Northwestern Europe. You start with the so-called beaker folk because of little vessels they made, beakers. Then they're displaced by the Urnfield, characterized by a change in burial habits. And the Hallstadians and the Latinae from digs at Hallstead in Austria and Latin in Switzerland. The Urnfield people are called Proto-Celts. They aren't at all. They were displaced. Just because they were there first, they're called Proto-Celts. Archaeology traces the Hallstatt and the Ten people, the first full-fledged Celtic civilization in Europe, from the steppes in the south of Russia, exactly where the lost tribes, so-called, as referred to in the apocryphal literature of the New Testament that was part of the King James, or rather the Old Testament, that was part of the King James. They took counsel, and for a year and a half through the headwaters of the Euphrates River that leads them through the Caucasus Mountains to an area north of the Black Sea is where they settled and reappear again as the Celts. Same time, same place. Within 100 years of their displacement from Israel to the east side of the Assyrian kingdom to be a buffer between them and the Medes or northern Iran, they reappear in tribal units coming from the area north of the Black Sea in successive waves across northwest Europe. We're 200 years old as a nation. Within the first 100 years, easily, less than that, we swept westward from that little fringe of the 13 colonies to secure the frontiers of this vast land. In about the same time span from their resettlement, these people renamed Bithumri, renamed Keltoi, across northwest Europe, became the vast tribal nations of the Celts, converging on the British Isles. Now, if they are the birthright people, and if they are the lost house of Israel, then inductive reasoning would tell you the first place that God sends His apostolic missionaries is where you're going to find the lost tribes. We've already covered that ground. And by deductive logic, we can trace the birthrights, and by inductive analysis, we can look for the traits in modern society. By deductive logic, they were a birthright nation chosen by God for His purposes, which included they were to be His oracle. There are two ways you look at the multiplied stories about creation, about the flood. Every society has got mythological stories of creation, the flood, sin, etc. Carnal mind, the critical nerds, they take that as an indication that the Bible is just one among many, telling the same stories a different way, all of which, because they embrace miracle, are mythological and full of fancy. You start with the resurrection, as I do. Spend the time to let the fact grab you. Coupled with the unique personage of Jesus and the claims He made about Himself being the one who rose, then miracles become an a priori part of your faith. You then discount nothing because miracles are there. And you take the same set of facts and say God preserved through a chosen people that he intended to be his oracle, which is what he calls them. The correct version of what is distorted in every culture, because the common root of mankind carries in its cultural remembrance cells these events which outside the control of God and outside the frame of being God's oracle and outside his revelatory guidance become exaggerated, distorted, added to myths of the same events common to mankind, whereas God chose to shine a light to a people chosen as his oracle that they might take the true version to the whole world and preserve it. So you expect the biblical record to have distorted and caricatured parallels in every culture, because the biblical record assumes a common root for all culture. And among other things, this chosen people had this oracle mission. Therefore, if they are fulfilling his calling, which God will see to it, as he did with the Old Testament saints, that in spite of themselves, he works through them to make them become a revelation of his word and his will and himself. Even in their failures, he enters in to work his good and to make their life teach his truth. Then those chosen people that carry forward the birthright blessing will continue to be God's oracle. Ergo, who took the Bible to the world? The Chinese? Who took the Bible to the world? Africa? Who took the Bible to the world? The Slavs? Who took the Bible to the world? Oh, I can point to India and the Fertile Crescent as the originators of many things. Including the roots of the Indo-European languages flowing out of India. Well, they didn't take the Bible to the world. They took the Bible to the world. The Celtic nations. Nobody else. Theirs are the great Bible societies. I'm going to go even further. As great as the wonderful work was that Luther did, God made sure Tyndale touched. That German scholar's work and it is the English speaking people of the world that have taken the Bible to its utmost and provided the translators or the urge to translate and the production thereof to most of the languages of the world. And it is in these last days, and I can absolutely assure you it will not change before Jesus comes, that the English language that has led the way in Bible study and Bible production will continue to be the language of the world for ease of such communication till Jesus comes. And when will I ever be able to find the words to open your eyes that God did not take with all the money of Arab princes? The unlimited resources of a Saddam Hussein. The power of Germany at its most powerful. The technological audacity and skills of the Japanese. He didn't take a voice from among any of them and hurl it worldwide. He took this voice from the city of the angels, absolutely committed to doing it primarily in the English language, in an absolute faith and expectancy that the leadership of every nation in the world recognizes the importance and their generations coming up of learning the English language. He took this preacher who understands who the lost tribes are and what their function is, steeped in Paulinism, historic churchmen, in spite of my enemies grinding their teeth at that, schooled in the languages of biblical research without ever knowing that God would take this voice and cover the whole wide world as but further fulfillment of that oracular purpose of His chosen people. How can you not have a sense of destiny to be a part of it and sit there and not participate in secret eight? I'm at 242. That means I need 58 more, giving 2,000 by next Sunday above your tithe. These are great and exciting days for the chosen. And what has happened to place us in this position is but the long a further chapter in the long book that has been written. God's in control. He does it His way, and He'll get it done, including what He's doing through us. The issue is, are you going to be smart enough, insightful enough, spiritual enough, courageous, thus faithful enough to be a part of it and not grow weary in well-doing? Now, I never intended to say any of this because I have a book I'm going to get to that you'll see why I'm talking about being an oracle and the chosen people. But if you got an ear to hear, you better hear. It's station break time coming up. Get on the telephone and give me your response.